and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I don't want a pod. Want to sit in my hot tub all day.
Any hot pie. Tub?
No, but I want one.
No.
But I want one.
It's about to come over.
I know. Could you imagine? Oh, damn it. We just gave away another $1 million idea. Comics and hot tubs.
Yeah. That's always a good idea.
Oh, my God. My Amazing Fantasy 15, it disintegrated.
Look at this omnibus. We can sell it. Special water damage from a hot tub.
By the way.
Ow, in a hot tub.
By the way, they don't float. CBG or CGC, it's not sealed. It's not sealed. Okay, we got that out of our way. What do you want to talk about?
Well, the first thing I want to talk about is there is a guy out on the internet, Bob Bierbaum, one of the first comic shop owners in the U.S., started a comic shop in San Francisco in the 70s, then went to work for Diamonds. Now he's on the internet talking comics history. He's dropped a bombshell a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Now, Marvel in 1968. Martin Goodman sold Marvel and his men's sweat magazines and everything else to a company called Perfect Film and Chemical Corporation, which also owned Candace Industries. And you probably remember in the 70s, Candace Industries, the black and white magazines would have Candace Industries on them. The Marvel stuff, it'd have it way down in the little fine print, maybe once in a while. But they were bought by a company called Perfect Film, and they changed their name to Perfect Film and Commonwealth United Corporation. They purchased Curtis Circulation Company, which is Curtis Publishing. Also in 1969, they purchased Desilu Studios. They sold off the popular library.
I thought Desilu sold to Paramount.
It's getting there. they bought the studio, not the all the other stuff. I think they bought the actual land it was on. And they sold the books, because there were books that Martin Goodman, paperback books, they sold those off to Fawcett Publications. But there is a rumor that he is saying that this Perfect Film and Chemical Corporation was a CIA front.
Hey, party at the CIA.
And I've asked him about it, and he said he's holding it for his book.
Uh-huh. He's probably got somebody over his head going, yeah, talk anymore a little bit, and we are going to show you what we did to that Nicaraguan guy.
Well, they went... Let's see. Candace Industries was liquidated. Here's what happened with Marvel, too. 1983, Candace's management, including Marvel president Jim Galton, made an offer for the company share in order to take Marvel private. Gabell considered the offer low and instead put the share up for sale on the open market. Candace executives sued him over that attempted share sale, claiming the sale was an attempt to take control. When Candace Industries was liquidated because of this lawsuit, it sold Marvel Entertainment Group to New World Pictures, and Curtis Circulation, all the other stuff, was sold to Hatchet Distribution, which, if you're following comic distribution, you know they're one of the smaller book distributors that is trying to get into the comic market as well. So I don't know how much of this is accurate when it comes to the CIA being involved. But there was this thing in the 60s where companies would diversify. They would buy up all sorts of things. And we've talked in the past about how Kinney, which was a bunch of parking lots, bought DC Comics and then Warner Brothers and then Time Magazine and became Warner Communication that we know today. I have some other Marvel history news, though.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me what a CIA agent does when it's time for bed. Goes undercover.
Aren't you supposed to wait and do those at the end of the show?
Yeah, but we won't be talking about the CIA at the end of the show. Matter of fact, we may not even be here.
Well, there is that. I hold in my hands...
Hey, whoa.
Figuratively.
It's a family show. Oh, okay, figuratively. Okay.
Marvel, an internal Marvel memo.
Whoa, so we are getting a lot like the CIA.
It is from Carol Kalish.
You know what you call janitors of the CIA? Sweeper agents.
Keep this up and I may edit you out and put in Wolfie.
Yeah, you don't have enough time to edit me out.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, no.
I've gotten rid of co-hosts before, Joe.
Yeah.
Carol Kalish, who was in charge of the marketing department at Marvel, and many would say she created the direct market becoming professional in the 80s. And there are some who say that her passing in about 91, 92, I don't remember the exact date, was when Marvel kind of lost their minds and had all the shiny covers and 47,000 X-Men books and everything. But I have a memo dated 9/4 of 1990, which is the sales for June of 1990. Now, June of 1990, Joe, what was the book that came out in June of 1990 that broke sales records?
Ethel the Aardvark Goes Quantity Surveying.
Yes, that was the lowest selling comic ever printed.
Oh, book. I thought, you said comic. Oh, that's very different. Well, the adaption to the of the movie, Ethel the Aardvark Goes Quantity Surveying.
So, nope, it was Spider-Man number one, the Todd McFarlane book.
Oh, he'll never last.
Well, yeah, it only lasted, 75 issues?
Yeah, and sold 1,054,700 copies.
Of the silver cover.
Yeah, the silver, and then there was the black cover, and not on here is the newsstand.
Right, this is direct
which one,
sales only.
Which one was bagged?
The silver cover, I believe.
Okay. So.
I don't remember, believe it or not. Of course,
well,
it was 30 years ago.
While you do that, I'll fire up the old Atomic Avenue and type in Spider-Man.
But that was the first comic that went absolutely insane with sales.
Okay, the green cover was newsstand, doesn't count. Gold cover, which was considered a second print. And
then there was the silver
printing. Yeah, silver and black, and they were probably both bagged, if I recall.
Okay. So they sold almost 2 million copies of that book. The next highest selling book, X-Men number 265, which I believe is a high dollar book, isn't it?
Which one?
265.
I will check that out. I'm still on the bag thing. Green stand, newsstand, polybag variant. Sealed black bag, Todd McFarlane, silver black cover variant. Yeah, they were bagged. Oh, my God. If it's still bagged, they're running around $30 to $50.
Wow.
That can't be right. Okay, here's a few less, 25. Because, I mean, most people, what do we do? We open them and look at them. So, yeah, having a bagged one. And how many years ago was this?
And this was the first bagged comic, if I remember right.
Probably. At least, I don't think it was bagged because anything was in it. At least I don't recall. So, Uncanny X-Men...
265.
Because I've got everything on my phone in a very, very small print, it's very, very hard to read. I got to keep flipping my readers on and off. All right. Allow me to, let's see, go lowest first. Buy it now. No. 265.
Okay. I thought that was a big deal.
Nope. Now, the next one, a little more interesting. 266.
266? Okay.
That was the first appearance of some cat named Gambit.
Ah. So, now, here's the thing. X-Men 265 sold 260,800 copies, but the issue before, number 264, sold 219,900 copies. X-Men jumped up a lot with this issue, and I think the reason is this was back when comics sold better in the summer. I remember the comic shop that I went to back in Illinois, he had the opposite effect. Because it was a college town, and when the college students left, his sales dropped by half. But the other comic shop, the one in Galesburg, well, kids are out of school. High schoolers have summer jobs, so they have more money. So comics sold better. And then as the comic audience aged, I think that summer bump went away. But your number one was the McFarlane X-Men. The number two was the... McFarlane X-Men. McFarlane Spider-Man. Your number two were the two X-Men books. And that was when X-Men in the summer would ship two issues. Spider-Man would ship two issues. Wolverine would ship two issues. Punisher would ship two issues. The next up was Amazing Spider-Man 336 and 337 in the annual. Numbers 8 and 9 were Wolverine. And they were at 189,000. And this one really surprised me. Number 10 in sales was What If?
Is that volume one?
Nope, volume two.
What if Conan battled? What if Wolverine battled Conan the Barbarian? So that probably caught a lot of people's attention.
It only went up 5,000 copies from the previous issue.
Yeah, and it's not an expensive back issue, so it's not like it was a key. But still, maybe it caught people's attention because that was kind of – I mean, first of all, Wolverine was hot. And were we on the downside of Conan there in 90?
Yeah, I'm thinking more What If was far more popular than I thought it was.
Yeah, it was pretty solid. I mean, this was volume two, and it kept going.
You had another you had the Spectacular Spider-Man annual, and this was – this changed in the 90s because I remember by the mid-90s, annuals didn't sell.
Yeah.
No one cared.
I wonder if they were all tied together.
Yes, this was when they had, you know, the four Spider-Man annuals were part of one story and the four X-Men annuals were part of one story and on and on and on.
What number was that?
Number 10? Number 10.
All right, let me Google that. I'm Googling along as a... let's see, what was it? Doesn't look like anything. Let me look closer. Spectacular Spider-Man. Spider-Man's Totally Tiny Adventure Part 2. That's when he fell into the microverse.
Yep.
So, okay. X-Factor was up there. When was this the Peter David X-Factor or still
no,
the...
This was 2 years before they did the X-Men number one and rejiggered all the X-Men. So this was still Walt Simonson drawing it and Louise Simonson writing it.
Yep.
But the original. It was the second biggest X-Men book. Punisher had the next three slots, 13, 14, and 15. Then Excalibur, this was when they started the Crosstimes caper, which
Punisher was still hot.
Yeah. They did point out that Punisher War Journal 21 sold less than the previous issue. They actually have a little thing, you know, the remarks, the cost, and then declined or new artist or something like that. Excalibur. Oh, they shipped two of Excalibur as well. New Mutants 92. Remember how there was this feeling at the time that, oh, New Mutants is, you know, falling apart and sales are dropping and Rob Liefeld came in and had to change the name because nobody was buying the New Mutants. New Mutants was number 19, still selling around 144,000 copies. It says new artist. So let's see who took over at New Mutants 92.
Let's see. New Mutants 92. It's got a bunch of scrolls on the cover.
It New artist, Bob Hall. But it was a Rob Liefeld cover, and yeah. Liefeld must have taken over with the next issue. This looks like a fill-in. You know, Dwight Zimmerman wrote it. Bob Hall penciled it. Yeah, this was a fill-in, which meant that they were giving Rob a little extra time to get that first issue done.
Yeah.
Probably a good idea. But let's see. Next up was Ghost Rider at number 20. And I remember, here's the weird thing. You know, New Mutants. Oh, New Mutants has fallen apart. Sales, we got to do something. Meanwhile, Ghost Rider, red hot. Got to put him in everything.
Hot. Well, same thing with Punisher at the time.
But Punisher at least was, you know, in the top 20. Not tied in with anything else. New Mutants, one step below it. Oh, it's a failure. This was during the time when John Byrne said if he got on a book, it became a top 10 book no matter what. Nope, not really, because Namor number 5, which he wrote and drew, was number 26. Hulk was increasing. There's the two Spider-Man books, Web of Spider-Man and Spectacular Spider-Man at 21 and 22. Hulk was at 23. Avengers had number 24 and 25. That was a bad period for the Avengers, too.
I don't remember. Hang on. Allow me to fire it up and see what the storylines were. Avengers. I can spell. What was the first one? 321?
Yep, 321.
All right. Looking at it. Dun, dun, dun. Oops.
Man, there were a lot of books they double shipped during the summer. I forgot all about that. I remember the X-Men and Spider-Man and Punisher, but I didn't realize it was so many other books.
Avenger was Crossing the Line, Part 3. Crossover with Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Actually, was Alpha Flight? I think it was just like 319 to 324. I don't think it crossed. Alpha Flight was in it.
But, well, I'm not seeing Alpha Flight in the top 36 issues, so.
Yeah, let's see. I see Quasar. This is when they were out at sea on the island.
Yeah.
There's Stingray. Vision was white. Captain America. Yeah, there's Alpha Flight in it. They show up by near the end.
Now,
so largely unforgettable.
Number 32 is a book that... now, probably, if people knew now what they knew then, if they knew now, it would have sold better. And that's Silver Surfer number 40, Jim Starlin starting to build toward Infinity Gauntlet. But it was number 32, only sold 105,000 copies.
Number 40. Yeah, this is when... This is when he sidetracked Silver Surfer into Dynamo City. Meanwhile, Thanos
saying the universe is overpopulated.
Yeah, it was the beginning of that because Thanos showed up. Not a terribly expensive. Well, some people are saying it's expensive. Let's see, lowest price, about $10. So, I mean, it's pretty good. A few guys are on.
Right under that is a one-shot, $4.95, Punisher, when Marvel was putting out after DC had created what they called the Dark Horse format, not Dark Horse, Dark Knight format, then they changed it to Prestige format. Marvel started putting out a bunch of them, and you could see why, because here's a $5 comic with Punisher, a one-shot, sold 104,000 copies. I remember they put out so many of these one shots and stuff, but there was one where we actually said, well, you know, they might as well just print money with this because it's Wolverine, Punisher, and Ghost Rider teaming up. We could not keep those on the shelf to save our lives when that thing came out at Schindler's. They then talk about the average per title at Marvel. without the star line, their average was 99,600 copies. If you added the star line in there, which was aimed at kids, it was about 97,000. So everything from 35 down sold less than average. Marvel Comics, number 57. This was when they had finally said, we were going to have an X-Men story, but it's going to be a Wolverine story. We'll always have a Wolverine story. There will always be a Wolverine story in Marvel Comics Presents. RoboCop number 6 sold really well, which is surprising because that was a piece of shit. That was, it's awful. I remember that RoboCop comic, and I wanted to like it so much. It's like RoboCop 2 and 3. I wanted to like those so much because I loved the first one. And I remember watching 2 and going, I don't care if it's written by Frank Miller. This is terrible. And I don't remember anything about 3 other than disappointment. Now, here's a comic that coming in at number 38 has been collected in an omnibus.
Why? I don't know.
Pendragon. Probably, I think, if not one of it, it was the first of the Marvel UK line, which no one cared about.
No. It was really sad. I mean, there was a little bit of heat on the new Death Head.
Yeah.
And I know Peter David brought some of the characters over into his run of Hulk, but nobody cared. They had shiny covers. They had miniseries. Yeah, it was. I don't know why. Was it? You remember what the deal was? Why they did that? Or brought Marvel UK over? Was it just, hey, we have it, let's use it?
Well, they were going to start a comic line in England, and it was easy enough, and it would defray costs if they also had it here in the U.S. Now, in the 70s, they had Marvel comics, but they were much like the British weekly books, and they mostly were reprints.
Now, the other question
this
I
comic
have.
Boom, they thought, oh, well, the British market is heating up. 2000 AD's got their, doing more and more sales. There are these other British comics. We should start a Marvel line that's all new and not just reprint. And they thought they'd bring it over here. And the problem was, to my mind, it became one of those things where the people who, I want one of every Marvel, were finally able to go, yeah, I don't need to buy one of every Marvel.
But what was the price of the average Marvel comic then?
Let's see. These were dollar books. This is when comics were a buck.
Yeah, because Pendragon, if I recall right, was more expensive.
Yep, dollar.
That was one of my complaints. It's like, if you're going to bring a line over, why are you making it more expensive?
Because it was on better paper.
Not relevant. Nobody cares.
Well,
nobody cared.
Here's one that I find interesting. Guardians of the Galaxy number 3, selling at 87,000, down from 98,900. This is, you were ordering it without knowing how number 1 had sold yet. Same for New Warriors number 2. New Warriors number 1 only sold 127,000 copies. Number 2, 86,200 copies. So it was one where, okay, Marvel's got all these number ones. This was when they did that. We have a new number one every month for the first 6 months of the
year. Well, New Warriors had some heat behind it. People were excited about it. Guardians of the Galaxy, I was excited for it, but not, I don't know if it had as big a heat. Obviously, it must have. It sold better than New Warriors.
Yeah, but if you look at it, New Warriors, I think New Warriors was one of those comics that grew over time. It came out and it kind of just, you look in here, oh, by the second issue, it's already dropping a whole bunch. But I think after the sales of number 1 started to grow. Whereas Guardians of the Galaxy kind of did the same thing. There were other books that didn't. Terror Incorporated, I'm looking at you. I'm just, from here on, I'm just going to point out the ones I find interesting, such as X-Men Classic number 50, Joe. That was a reprint book, reprinting the X-Men. And it, I think they still had the new backup in the back, but they may have discontinued it by this time, but sold 76,000 copies.
I was going to point out, you got a Hellraiser at number 65, Clive Barker, Marvel Age, the voice, or the Mouthpiece magazine, came in with 49,000. Gru, G.I. Joe. Some of the titles are just fun. I mean, like NAMM was waning at 47.
Yeah, this was when the sales were dropping, and they said, okay, the guy who's writing it, we're going to squeeze him off, and let's start putting the Punisher in it.
Yeah. They were doing Akira. I believe that was through the Epic line.
Yep. Go up to number 46.
Punisher movie
bookshelf edition. This is the adaptation of the 1990 Punisher movie.
Let's see. Probably sold
more copies of that than people bought tickets.
Yeah.
There's the adaptation of RoboCop 2 coming in at number 49. Then right below it, the bookshelf. So what they did, they would have the bookshelf, which was the square-bound one, and then they would break it up into a mini-series, and that the sales on that are kind of surprising.
I'm looking up one I don't ever recall. I'm looking. There's your Marvel Tales.
Yep.
The reprint. Yep. Savage Sword of Conan, which we talked about. This is number 70, 71. The one I had to look up was number 72, Elsewhere Prints. It was an Epic book printed under the Epic label. And it's just one of the series published by Epic about Mobius's airtight garage.
Yep, it's a Mobius adaptation.
So, yeah. And underneath that was Alien Legion, which I know we've talked about in the past. Another Epic line.
Marvel Fanfare came in with, about 37,000 sales.
Hero.
Transformers, number 69, was only selling 26,000 copies. Yeah. And dropping
this was the tail end of Transformers. It's also, these are some of the more pricey back issues of the Marvel line because nobody was buying it.
Yep.
Some of these titles I had to look up, like number 74 is Hero, which was...
Yeah, that was this weird mini-series.
Yeah.
That they never... You know, they just kind of dropped it on the market and was never heard from again.
Yeah, it looked like Marvel owns it, so it might come back. So maybe you might want to go dig it out and see. Now, again, if I was writing stuff, this would be the type of stuff I would tap into. Like, hey, let's bring this guy back.
Temporary Natives, number 84. Joe, do you remember what Temporary Natives was?
No.
Do you remember Tales from the Heart from Entropy Press?
Oh, yes, I do now.
Marvel one shot of by those creators, the same story, which was the story of a woman who had joined the Peace Corps and gone to Africa. Only sold 13,000 copies.
Elf is above that, the from the TV show. I just want to look at something because that's not a lot of copies for.
Well, that was a star book. So they sold on the newsstands and through subscriptions.
Okay.
Right above that is Critical Mass. Remember the Shadowline saga that Epic tried to do?
Yeah.
This was the conclusion of that. Those books didn't sell. So they took everything that they had pre-done because Archie Goodwin had kind of, he masterminded that little superhero shared universe thing in Epic. They had worked out so far in advance that they're like, okay, we've got all this stuff. Let's do two more to wrap it up. It'll be seven issues in a prestige format just so that we get it out there and make some money back on it. They also listed Kazar graphic novel, which I don't even remember. And then you've got the Star books. And then you have the, at the very bottom, Heathcliff number 50.
Street Poet Ray.
That was one that everybody made so many jokes about. as Marvel's worst selling book. Well, it wasn't. Right above that, however, a $75 slipcase reprint of the Simon and Kirby stories from Captain America 1 through 10.
I remember that. I did buy that.
I have that. And Joe, why did Marvel get utterly pissed off at Greg Dixon over it?
I don't recall. Again, this was
in the coloring. Someone put a dick on Bucky when he was tied up. Oh. It wasn't in the art, but in the coloring, someone just put a red dick on him. And when that came out, Marvel was like, shit!
I got to look up on eBay to see if that's...
And it was too expensive for them to do a reprint with, you know, only... You know, here it is. It sold 5,520 copies, which is huge for a $75 book when regular comics were a buck each.
Above that, I have to laugh. It was a media tie-in for a Saturday cartoon. Camp Candy, based on John Candy. He was doing some show. No idea what it was about because I wasn't watching it. But it's just funny how as we get to the bottom, everything switches to like Epic Line and the Star Line.
Yep.
But again, this is direct sales. Maybe they had better presence on the newsstand.
Here's something that's rather important. Total anticipated billing. This is how much Marvel would make on all these books.
Oh.
$6,061,000. The month before that was $4,669,000. So I would say that... boy, that Spider-Man book got him $1 million easy.
But
these are the actual numbers, and it just fascinated me. They had everything on there. The only trade paperback was a Martial Law trade paperback, which reprinted it. All the Martial Law stuff that they'd done. There were a couple of the graphic novels, which were more the album, were the graphic album. You know, that were bigger and only about 48 to 90 pages.
By the way, if you are into comic shop dicks, such as, you know, Batman and his, if you want to check out what Bucky's look like, you can find that edition on eBay. It's about $60.
Really?
Yeah. This is open. There's a lot of them open.
To invest in.
If it's sealed, it goes a lot higher.
Well, yeah.
But most of them tend to be, again, this is just one person, this is the lowest price. Most of them tend to be hovering around 75, and then they tend to go up a lot. Some people are asking, like, sometimes you wonder if people are looking at what's going on eBay. One guy's asking $400 for it. It's sealed. You know, it may be a sealed one, but, you know, underneath it's an open one for $216. So,
well, let's see what Mile High is charging for it.
Well, they're in a different reality anyways. Mile High always jacks their price up the less copies they have.
Yeah.
Because he has this idea where he wants to slow the sales down on it until more come in or it evens out. So he could have one copy at $500. And how many of these were published?
They said 5,500 were sold.
Yeah.
And this is a direct selling it. He is selling it fair $60, good $120, very good $180, fine $240, very fine $270, and near mint for $300.
Okay. So, yeah, again, that may make a difference. But, again, I see some of these open ones at near mint. So, but, again, you do your own business thing. If you're on eBay, it's a different MNO.
And the other thing about Chuck Rosansky is he wants to have at least one of everything. So that if you need that number, Strawberry Shortcake number 4, he's got it. Yep. If you need that Camp Candy number 3, he's got it. But that's sort of his business model. He's kind of the person of last resort in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But he's got everything, you know.
So now the question I have, Corey, if you can recall, which titles were you buying at the time?
Well, I was working at Schindler's, so I read most everything. Let me grab the. Okay, I think it's more interesting to see in the like the middle tier. Marvel Comics Presents, I loved. I loved Marvel Comics Presents. I love anthologies. Even if one story was crap, you'd get at least one good story, and the other two would be readable. And I liked how it started, where it was bringing classic creators back with their characters. You had a Steve Gerber Man Thing story. You had a Doug Mensch Master Kung Fu story. You know, stuff like that. You started with John Buscema drawing Wolverine. Yeah, I'm sorry, you can't beat that in my mind. But as it went on, a lot of it was, I think I told you Scott Lodell's story. He told us how he broke into comics. He worked near Marvel. So what he would do every day on his way to work, he would stop by at Marvel and drop off another 8-page story. And he knew that they needed to do copyright, you know, characters need to show up every so often for the copyright to be retained. So he would go through the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, pick out characters that no one had done a story about in a while, write up an 8-page story, drop it off on his way to work every day, so that Marvel knew he could meet deadlines. And they started using them, but that's how he got the X-Men. He didn't get the X-Men because he was a great writer. He got the X-Men because the book was perennially late, and they knew, well, no matter what, the words will be legible, and he will get it in on time.
Yeah, yeah. He banged them out. And that was important back then. They didn't want late books.
Late books cost money.
So I've got my list here, and what's interesting is when I'm looking at what came out at the time, I believe Pat and I were buying at Hot Comics, and we were also still selling things as P&J at weekends. So obviously, Spider-Man, we were all over.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. Gruber might remember. I'll ask him next time I talk to him. He might remember how many he bought. But I bought the Spider-Man, and I obviously bought multiple copies, including, you know, to open one. I was X-Men. I was a Marvel. I was one of those Marvel guys you talked about. But I. X-Men, Spider-Man, Wolverine, What If, X-Factor, the annuals. I was still buying New Mutants. Let's see, Avengers, Namor I was buying because I love Byrne. I was probably still rolling around from FF. I was buying Cap America.
By the way, that FF, I think, is the when Walt Simonson was on it.
Yeah. Silver Surfer, Guardians, New Warriors, we talked about. I was big on Deathlok. I bought Doctor Strange.
That was the Deathlok 4-issue prestige format series, yep. Which I loved. Oh,
absolutely. Good stuff. Doctor Strange I was big on. Impossible Man Summer Special, which I loved. I just ended up selling a set of them off the eBays, and they're still a blast to read. I think I have it in the Impossible Man paperback, which has like his romp through Marvel and a bunch of other stuff. So that was fun. She-Hulk I was buying. Marvel Age I bought. Alien Gru, Legion. Transformers. Gru. I wasn't buying Gru.
What?
I don't know. I wasn't buying Gru at the time. I bought like the first 25 and then I dropped off. I did buy the Martial Law trade paperback. Let's see. I've got to go back a page.
Plastic Forks I bought.
I probably bought that too, because when you said temporary natives, now I recall buying it. I know I bought Critical Mass, I bought Steeltown Rockers. I don't remember reading any of them, but I think I read them or bought them because I was thinking, well, they're epic. I'm reading epic. I'm obviously a step up above most Neanderthals.
Plastic Forks was a Ted McKeever miniseries, and I remember I started buying it because the person I was married to earlier really liked Ted McKeever. And then it was, okay, well, that's fallen apart, but I want to at least have the end of it. And then a few years later, I read it and I went, wow, this is exceedingly weird. His stuff got more readable later on, but he's a very odd creator. And in a lot of ways, he's one of those guys that people in comics absolutely love. But people outside of comics spend a lot of time going, I don't know if I get this. It's a lot like when Bill Sienkiewicz did Stray Toasters.
Oh, yeah.
He had just come off of Elektra Assassin, which was weird, but people loved it. And then Stray Toasters was the first thing he wrote, and people were like, I don't get what the hell this is. But Archie Goodwin, hey, Bill Sienkiewicz wants to do it. Hey, I'll let Bill Sienkiewicz do whatever he wants. I've gone back and read it a few times, and it's, you know, it's strange. I don't know if I like it or not, but it's strange. It's experimental. It's like going to see one of those art films when you come out of it going, well, that had a lot to think about. Was it a story? Not really.
Yeah, I just remember.
You have to admit, this was also like 3 years after Shooter had left. If you notice, New Universe is completely gone. Epic sales have taken a huge tumble. This was Archie Goodwin, I think, had already moved over to DC because he was heavily involved in the Armageddon 2001. They were, I don't know what we're going to do with Epic. And Akira, yeah, this is Akira 22. I remember Akira, it stopped and they said, well, once he finishes it, we'll print it. And it was like 8 years later when he finally finished it. Hasn't done a comic since, by the way. The guy who did Akira has not done a comic since. Probably doesn't need to. But I worked at Shinders during this time. And one of the things that really surprised me when I look at this, they don't have Barbie on here. I was told that Shinders, and specifically the stores I worked at, were almost a tenth of Marvel sales for the entire run of Barbie, because I put them down with the Tiger Beat and Bop and all those teeny Bop or tween girl magazines, and the little girls were like, oh, it's a Barbie comic, mom, can I have the Barbie comic, I want the Barbie comic. And the dads who came in for the baseball cards, and the little girls were looking around bored as hell, and then they'd see, I want the Barbie comic, I want the Barbie comic. We sold so many of those just because I was sneaky and put them down where the little girls could see them.
Brilliant. I was buying with Pat at Hot Comics, and it was just Hot Comics. There was no St. Paul at the time, so we were probably using Advance Comics, the Capital City version of Previews, and we would just pre-order everything ahead of time. And I'm going to have to ask Gruber if he remembers how many Spider-Men we ordered, because I know we were real excited about it. He had that run on Amazing Spider-Man, everyone but Gaga over, and then it's like, here he has his own. I never did.
And that was the first where Marvel hyped the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Then the next year we had X-Force number one.
Which sold, came polybagged with its own unique card in each one.
And I think it sold 4 or 5 million. Then the next year was the monster X-Men number one, where week one they had a cover. They came out the next week with a different cover, the next week with a different cover, the next week with a different cover. And then the fifth week was all four of the covers on one fold-out cover. Did anybody care about the story? Hell no. They were all waiting for that number one where you get the fold-out Jim Lee art. Then Jim Lee left after a year and went to Image. Same for Todd McFarlane. They gave him his own Spider-Man book, and after like 14, 15 issues, it's like, oh, you mean I can't, the comics code won't let me draw a sword going into Juggernaut's eyes? I quit. Fuck you all. He has said that's why he quit. He had the drawing.
Which is interesting because at the time, I didn't know that.
Shatterstar shoved a sword in Juggernaut's eyes, and the comics code went, but you can't show that. What the hell?
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's interesting because I've seen the artwork and then I've seen the way they had it. And I have to say it's actually more effective just seeing the sword coming to his eye and you hear, yeah, slurch.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, because your brain comes up with stuff far more crazy than what anything Todd could draw.
It's like the old the thing in Psycho. Everybody who saw Psycho, you ask them years later, it's like, oh yeah, you saw the knife and him plunging it into her. Nope, not once did the knife didn't even touch her, I don't believe, in any of the shots they used. It was how they edited it, and your brain filled in the rest. And that's what a lot of Marvel and DC would do in the 60s and 70s. They would lead up to it and let your brain fill in the rest, because the comic code wouldn't let them. Then by the time you got to the 90s, it's, no, you show it. To where you got the Marvel Max line, where I'm reading some of those now, and it's like, oh, wow, this is, whoa.
Yeah.
This would be released unrated in movie theaters. You know what would not be released unrated in movie theaters, Joe?
I got a list here. You want me to start alphabetically?
No, I just want you to get me to our ad for NordVPN.
Let's hear it.
Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And now, here's something we hope you'll really like. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause. Basically, because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be. where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, no, not where he comes over to my house and steals my baked ziti.
Oh, I thought we were going to compare bikini lines before the winter sets in.
Oh, that's not a good idea. No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because my computer decided to shut my eBay page. So excuse me while I whip this out.
Woo!
I have put on a lot of stuff from the MCBA. So if you know, I'm not saying what it is. Expensive, rare, hidden gem, variant covers. I can't say that. If you want to make an offer on them, please do, because they're selling fast. I actually have, I'll talk a little bit in geeking, but I found some toys and some odd stuff from Hot Comics that I'll be putting on the eBays. And I've been trying to avoid the toys just because they're real expensive.
Is that avoiding the Noid?
Well, they're a bitch to pack is what it is. I do got other things, graphic novel. You know, I'm going to have some time to put things on. So it's always fun to check it out. Occasionally, I run across things that make me go, what the deuce is that? For example, I found, Corey, have you ever played the X-Men Pressman games, board games?
Yes.
Did you happen to save the comic books that came with them?
Oh, I don't remember.
Now, not every comic, because what happened was some of them, like there was a, I think, a video game that came with just a spiral copy of the guide to the Xavier Mansion and that type of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That was a video game.
I did not, because I had a friend who had the Commodore when in the 80s. So I played them, but I didn't buy them.
Yeah, and you could get them through comic shops. And a lot of the games, the various Pressman games, came, some of them were cool because it came with little X-Men figures. So they were collectible in and of themselves. Now, what is really unique about them is that two of them came with exclusive comics, exclusive X-Men comics. One of them is Uncanny X-Men 303. What's with it? Meh, not that big. But it's considered a second print. You can tell the difference from it because, well, I should say that, but it's the death of Colossus's sister. Don't worry, she gets better. The regular cover's got a white background. The game variant has a gold background. And it's not extremely expensive on the eBays because it's you would think it would be because you had to buy the game. You had to open the game. But, you know, I looked and I found the prices weren't that expensive. Now, however, there was another version that came out, and I'm looking at the – I got actual pictures of the game here. The name of the game was – The Uncanny X-Men Alert Adventure Games. And on the bottom, there was a blurb that would say, limited edition comic inside. One of them had a picture of a silver inked X-Men number 13. Number 11. I said that wrong. And this is one, it was during a Mojo story. Jim Lee was still, well, he might have been writing it. Scott Liddell was there. We already talked about him. Jim Lee was doing the art, but he might have been bailing. Actually, he bailed the next issue because Mark Texera was in there. But this had Wolverine on the cover, and the silver-inked Pressman edition goes for silly money. I don't know if it's because it's a Jim Lee cover. I don't know if it's just because there are none in the wild to be had. They're hard to find. It's just one of those books that's really weird. You know, they're both... You could only get them in the games, but if you do see them in the wild and you see them cheap, it might be worth picking up because of the type of variants you won't find. Another variant, I don't know, Corey, did you ever play The Uncanny X-Men, Madness in Murder World from Paragon Software?
I did not.
I did not either, but I had it. I had a bad habit of buying things and never playing the game. But I loved buying it because this one came with a comic book, too. Marvel Comics and Paragon Software presents The Uncanny X-Men, Madness in Murder World. I have no idea where my copy went to. It was a curled up, I mean, it was rolled. And so if you find one and it's flat, that means somebody took it and flattened it. I put mine under something to flatten it out, and I've never found it since. I have the box with the 5 1/4 inch discs in it still. But I bought one cheap on eBay, and it's hard. It's almost impossible to find this in mint shape. Just because it was curled up. I mean, it's almost like the subscription copy stuff in the 60s. Let's see. I just open up the one I got. So this thing came out in 1989. Let's see. Madness in Murder World. Danny Fingeroth wrote it. Marco Bagley is the penciler. Kind of a short story. It's like a prelude to get the game going. You got Dazzler, Wolverine, Storm, Cyclops, Nightcrawler, and Colossus. Under Magneto's direction, Arcade has kidnapped Charles Xavier. He is too weakened to help attack, but he can telepathically help you through the death traps of Murder World. Let the game begin. Around the same time was another game, Amazing Spider-Man and Captain America, Doctor Doom's Revenge. But as far as I know, that didn't have a comic book with it. Or it might have. I'll keep looking, and if I find it, I'll let you know about it. But there's a couple comics that, you know, well, hard to find in the wild. The X-Men comic is, well, a lot of guys have it slab for silly money. The other one, 303, is pretty easy to find. Which one do I have? Well, first of all, I'm not selling Madness in Murder World yet. I'll probably combine it with the software program and sell it as a bundle. But I do have one of the X-Men comics online. At least it's there as we talk. Might not be there by next week. Well, there might not be a lot of things there by next week because things are selling and selling fairly steady. Check it out, KRAYZ. I take special deals, special offers from anybody who wants to do what I tell you to do every week. Just send me a quick note, say you listen to this here podcast. I'll either toss in something extra special. Or if you want to make a deal, I want to
high price variance that I'm selling. I'm not supposed to say it's selling for other people. You know, etc.
You know what to do.
Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I spend the whole time reading the new previews while Joe sits and fumes that he hasn't got his yet. No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on? Other than the fact that you don't have your previews yet.
I was supposed to have my previews already?
I got mine today.
Well, I really don't like you. Hang on a second here. While we're doing that, I'm going to look and see. I have absolutely no sign of anything being shipped. So I will go out and I will. I'm actually. What the hell? A little geeking. But I. Department of Homeland Security gave a. Kind of a 8-hour reward to everybody in Homeland Security because most of us over Labor Day had to work. You know, we don't get the day off. You may, we don't. And I actually am burning my 8 hours tomorrow, so I'm actually off all Friday. So knowing what you just told me, Corey, I will run out and now I have an excuse to go to a comic store and pick up a previews. So what do you think? Previews next week?
Sure.
Sounds good. We got it settled. Some other things I'm freaking on. Corey, do you play any phone games?
I still play The Simpsons. I play Candy Crush. I have about 8 different Candy Crush games.
Oh, yeah. My wife plays a few. The big ones I'm playing now.
That's mostly what I play.
I stopped playing Simpsons for some reason. I forget why. Did they have like a defect a couple years ago?
I don't know.
Okay, because I know
haven't had a problem, but
okay, maybe I should check because I did disinstall mine once because for some reason my phone wasn't smart enough to play the game after an update, and then I kept playing again, and then I got to another point where it was like I couldn't do what I needed to do to get the event done, and oh, I remember what it was. It was trying to log in. They had decided they were going to do a two-step login process. And again, I geeked about this. I'll give a Joe prize to anybody who can remember that because I was livid. They had no reason to think that, oh, people are hijacking my Simpsons game to do what? Play it? So all of a sudden you were forced to use that two-step process. Normally it's not a big deal. You just put in your name and then a code comes to your phone. The codes weren't coming and people were complaining about it. They've been complaining about it 2 months before I got nailed with the update. And at that point, I just bailed. I said, this is utterly, utterly ridiculous. You can keep changing your email, get a new password, but they never sent the two code. So every time you signed in, you had to do that. Have you run across that phenomenon, Corey, or have you?
Every so often, you have to re-sign in, and there are times when it won't let you. But really, if you just kind of wait a half hour, usually it's because somebody at EA tripped over a cord or who knows. Yeah, but if you just wait a bit and try again in an hour or two.
But you never got swept up in this two-step process where you had to do a verification code sent to your email that you registered with. Did you ever get swept up in that or were you
from? Oh, I always do two-step authentication.
Yeah, but this is when they were they mandated it, and then they weren't sending the codes.
Oh,
and that's why I bailed. And you know, the sad thing was, is a guy from EA was fabulous in helping me because I had it on my old crazy at ISD.net, which I stopped, and I told the guy, you know, I had it on this, and he helped me get it on my Gmail. So he did all this wonderful stuff. And it still was messed up. And that had to have been years ago. So maybe I'll try that again. But, you know, I've been playing other games. I play Gardenscapes. I'm still playing Wild Frontier. I play Harry Potter Puzzle Search, which is just a, you know, match three and keep on going. But what's funny is I play a couple that are just real heavily ad. Like I got this bubble game I play. I play this one called Bazooka Boy, which is a dumb, brainless game. But 99% of the games I look, I see a game and they show you the graphics and you're thinking, wow, that looks kind of cool. And for a while, I would put them on the phone and to realize, okay, the graphics they showed me are not what the gameplay is. It's kind of one of those game plays where you have to pay in order to get anywhere. Otherwise, you're not getting anywhere. So what I've been doing is when I see a game that looks interesting, like there was one that came up, Fish Capades or something. And it looks interesting. But then I look at the reviews and most of the reviews are like 4.0, 4.3, because a lot of ads, a lot of misleading, like the things you showed me I'm supposed to do, I don't do. So it's really kind of disheartening because there's a lot of games I'd like to play. In the meantime, like Bazooka Boy, which is just a dumb game. You got a bazooka. You're trying to kill the enemy. If you do, you dance. If you don't, you die horribly. Little blood spurts out of you. And what's cool about it is you don't have to go through 30-second ads. Every time you do something, it's an ad. But some of the ads are just little 5-second ads of a 30-second ad. After 5 seconds, you can do it. And I'm so used to just like with the Harry Potter game. Oh, they'll give me a bunch of extra spells if I watch a 30-second ad. Okay, hit the thing, let it play for 30 seconds. You know, whatever. I'm doing this to relax. It doesn't really matter. Bazooka Boy was kind of weird because I would do the whole 30 seconds and then realize, oh, I could have bailed at 5 seconds. I've got one called Bubble Empire Challenge. Same thing. Between levels, you get ads. Yeah, I understand. It's probably one big-ass company pushing the same platform, but you know, if you're going to advertise something that you're not delivering on, it's really disappointing. And the reviews show it. And of course, we're sorry you didn't have good blah, blah, blah. Ugh. Whatever, boys. So that's kind of boring. Let's see. I saw Facebook, you Meta suck. By the way, I'm not going to talk about it. I've got a major freaking going on. Corey knows what's going on. I don't want to be a downer about it, but I did deactivate my Facebook page for a while. So if you were trying to contact me through Facebook, you're not going to find me. I don't know. Did it take down our crazy comic page?
Nope.
Or is it? Oh, good. So because it's attached to you as well. So
yeah,
you can always email me through Facebook. You know, Corey talks about how to get a hold of him if you have a pressing message for me. But I had to back out of Facebook because otherwise I would go on one of those famous rant that Corey is wise enough to block me after he lets me go off for 50 minutes and says, no, that's not going on the podcast. So anyways,
I have saved us from being deported many times.
Many times. You're very wise in that sense. Let's see. What else am I? Oh, one more freaking. Just read another article. Apparently, it's going to be a bad Christmas for retailers unless you're Walmart or Target. And Corey and I will say this as we get closer and closer. We don't always practice it, but we say it. Shop local if you can, especially in terms of comics and graphic novels. Not a bad idea to start. Like what I used to do at the shop is I had a thing I would give to all my subscribers and say, hand this to your loved one, fill it out. These are the things I'm interested in. And I would always say, you can ask for individual comics, but graphic novels, toys are easier for me to do. And if they get it back to me early, like around Thanksgiving or before, I can actually order and try to get it here in time. And there's always a good old gift certificate. I say that with the caveat that sometimes you just have to go to Amazon. For example, I mean, Corey, I ride Corey all the time about him ordering on Amazon, but I have clip-on sunglasses. You know, I need glasses. It was hard when we were doing the Marvel list because I'm switching between my readers, which I need to see really small print, and then I use glasses for distance. I tried bifocals. They made me sick, so I just switch back and forth. But being diabetic, you're also supposed to wear sunglasses so that the UV rays from bouncing off your hood or, you know, when you decide to stare at the sun and try to count the spots on the sun. I broke my clip-ons. It'll be part of what happened in geeking, so I'll wait till we get there. But I left them in my coat. My coat got all dirty. And then, the washer, the dryer were not kind to them. I reach in and I'm like, oh, there's the lens. I have no idea where the rest of the clip-ons went. So I figure, you know what? I'll just go to not Walmart. I went to Walgreens, you know, big national chain. They should have them. Nope. Oh, maybe it was CVS across the street. Go over to CVS. Nope. And I talked to somebody there and I said, do you used to have clip-ons here? Oh, yeah. We only carried them during the summer. And my brain kind of did a short circuit. I kept my tongue quiet as I walked on and said, yeah, apparently we don't have sun during winter and fall and spring, only summer. Amazon, order me a pair of clip-on sunglasses. So again, if you're not going to carry it, I'm going to Amazon. I know Walmart and Target don't carry them because I've already looked there. So there used to be a little guy out at the Mall of America. I'd always go buy my clip-ons from him. He was right in the East Court, and eventually he must have closed shop or they charged too much. So always try to buy local if you can. By the way, Amazon, well, they don't really need our help. They lost, 5% of their stock value because they missed their projected sales by $10 million, and Wall Street punished them. I wonder how much Amazon CIA owns. Anyways, Corey, what are you freaking on?
I'm going to read a press release from Ring of Honor Wrestling.
Uh-oh.
Throughout the pandemic, our top priority was to keep everyone healthy and safe. Despite not producing any live events for over 18 months, we were able to keep everyone fully contracted. Now we find ourselves at a time when we need to make changes to our business operations and are planning a pivot for Ring of Honor with a new mission and strategy. The year will culminate with a final battle in December, and we will be taking the first quarter of 2022 to work internally to reimagine Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor has the most dedicated fans in the industry. We appreciate their loyalty and patience as we reconceptualize Ring of Honor. We anticipate returning to live events in April for Supercard of Honor with a new fan-focused product and provide a unique experience for wrestling fans. The COO, Joe Koff, then did an interview with Mike Johnson where he laid out all of the detail. He had to wait until he had told all of the wrestlers what it is. If your contract expires in January, I'm sorry, if your contract expires at the end of the year, you will not be re-signed. If your contract expires later, they will honor the contract. However, after Final Battle, the pay-per-view in December, they will not be running any events at all. What they have been doing is taping for TV. You know, they would bring everybody in, tape a bunch of TV in an empty arena for like 3 to 4 weeks and keep the TV show going. They are not going to be doing that because they're not selling any tickets. They haven't sold any tickets for 18 months now. The TV show will be a mix of stuff they have already in the can they haven't used and stuff from the past because Ring of Honor's been around since 2002. But it basically means they are taking a hiatus. And they say that they will be back in a new form in April. But whenever anybody takes a hiatus, be it a comic company,
or butts
a
and whips.
Band, yeah, a band, a wrestling company, anything, it's rare for them to come back. Ring of Honor, I have been a huge fan of Ring of Honor since they first came to Minnesota, and I saw CM Punk beat the shit out of a soda machine.
Probably not had it coming. Wait, was it a Coke machine or a Pepsi?
It was a Pepsi machine at the St. Paul Armory that he put his dollar into, and it didn't give him any soda.
I hope they got that on tape.
No, they don't.
Oh.
But I remember going in, and, you know, everybody's, you know, getting their seats and everything. And here's this guy in sweats beating the shit out of a Pepsi machine. And I look over at one of the people who's helping people find their seats. Like, yeah, that's one of the wrestlers. Who is that? It's CM Punk. He's in the main event. Oh, that's not good. I've seen Ring of Honor all but about two or three times when they came to the Twin Cities. I've watched every episode of it since they went on Sinclair TV over a decade ago. They've had 500 and some episodes. Now, the good thing is this means we will have more episodes than Ring of Honor TV. Another one that we have beaten. But Ring of Honor was always a different style of wrestling than what you got from the majors. They were the guys who started the flippy dippy, you know, 50,000 flips. Then they moved to what was known as strong style, where everything looked like an MMA fight. Now they are doing something called pure wrestling, which I absolutely love. It's only three rope breaks. If you punch somebody, you're given a warning. If you punch them a second time, you lose. Anybody interferes, whoever interferes is fired, and you could be fired as well. You know, the rules are strictly enforced. So it's a more, I like to call it a mat-based style, where they're, you know, hold for hold, that sort of wrestling, a lot like what Vern Gagne used to have, except sped up. Because Vern, somebody would slap on a headlock and stay there for 5 minutes.
Boring.
But Ring of Honor is taking a break, and I'm gutted by that. And one thing you could point to, what was it? 2 years ago, they were in Madison Square Garden with New Japan, and they had got there on the strength of the fact that they had the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes and Adam Page and these other people who all kind of went off to form AEW. So in a lot of ways, AEW stole their thunder. But Ring of Honor's always had their people stolen from them. Early on, they had most of their crew stolen by Impact. You can look at NXT until it got turned into the typical Vince McMahon bullshit about a month and a half ago. Their entire roster was made up of people from Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor was where you learned your craft. There are people in there who are utterly fantastic. And I'm just, it's a company that I've really enjoyed. I hope they're able to come back. And this reimagining is probably going to be, how can we rebuild our company and have a show that makes a profit? So, also, supply chain issues. DC is delaying more and more of their big books. Marvel has not announced any delays, but DC is announcing that more and more of their big books are canceled. And this is what I want to ask Joe about. Image has said there, because of the paper shortage, there will be no more second printings. Now, you owned a comic shop when Marvel announced no more second printings, although that was for a vastly different reason. How did that change your ordering?
Didn't really. I mean, the worst part would be for miniseries. A regular series, I wasn't too worried about it. Again, I was part of a Hot Comics chain, so if I needed issues, at the height when we had three stores, I could go over, like, get three issues off the shelf, come back, boom, I had nine issues. If it was a book that was critically short or super hot, we were always, you know, well, I need like two to cover subscribers or whatever. And if I didn't have any on the shelf, that's just the way it was. In a miniseries, I just made sure by issue four or during the late 90s when there were three issues that I didn't have a lot. So I might, like, okay, for issue one, I'd buy maybe, like, if it was an X-Men book, maybe 10 for the shelf, assuming it wasn't super hot. Issue two, I'd buy five, maybe three or two, because I didn't want to be stuck with issues two, three, and four and no way to get number ones. So I did kind of adjust that way. For regular series, I was less concerned about it because, and again, this was before, I'll wait for the trade. You know, that was beginning to evolve, but it wasn't as defined as it is now. So, yeah, it on miniseries or on series I wasn't quite sure about. And again, we didn't have final order cutoff, so I couldn't adjust. Now, I could always reorder number two if it sold out fast, but I couldn't be sure to have it. I think that was pretty much it. You know, I mean, I always felt bad about it because you wanted someone to jump on board, but, you know, if they couldn't, they couldn't.
Well, Joe, what are you geeking on?
All right. Let's see. Oh, I bought some eBay stuff. Some of this stuff I talked about. I already talked about the X-Men Madness and Murder World. I did order copies of the hardcover The Bus by Paul Kirchner. The Bus was a strip originated in heavy metal until heavy metal went under for a bit, and then they brought The Bus 2 back. I ordered these direct from Paul, and he put in a most delightful sketch in both ones. Not a little cheapy sketch, but a really, really cool sketch. So if you are at all interested in looking at these books, I highly recommend them. Type in The Bus, Paul Kirchner, like it sounds. Google it before, but you'll get right to him. And you'll see it because it'll say The Bus 2, signed by the author. And believe me, with the type of freaking I didn't talk about, it was a delight to open these books and see these really, really cool sketches. Out of the San Diego Comic-Con, obviously not going. Is it virtual this year? I don't even remember.
It was virtual in the summer, but the one over Thanksgiving will be in person. However, if you go for the Mark Evanier panels, he will not be there.
Oh.
He has decided he is not going.
Okay. But I decided, I noticed this had popped up, and I blabbed about it. I picked up the first Batmobile Hot Wheel, and it's in a classic.
Oh, yeah, you talked about that last week.
Yeah, and I got it, and oh, my God, is it sweet. I really, really want to open this. But what I noticed is, and I'm not upset, the prices have been dropping a bit. I mean, I think paid $110 for mine, and now they're going about $90. There's a few at $70. So I may put feelers out to see if I can't find one that's beat up, because I really want to open this sucker. I don't know if they will ever redo this. Like the Spider-Mobile, they had a San Diego Comic-Con version, and then they came out with a cheaper version that I opened, obviously. Some of the other Batmans they opened up. And again, this is, if you're at all interested in this stuff or you're looking for something to invest in, I forget the year, but they came out with the Wonder Woman Invisible Jet. It was kind of a Mattel wink, wink joke. You got it. It looked like a regular Hot Wheel, and it had the outline plastic of the Invisible Jet. I remember opening mine and dropping it. Never found it again, so I had to buy another one. Anyways, that's going, I think it was 25, 30 bucks I bought it at. It's going upwards of 400 right now. They made a second version, not in the blue Hot Wheel car, but in the, it was, well, I don't know. It's around here somewhere. And you'll find out why when I get to the next geeking thing. Last year or the year before, they did one where it was Superman holding that classic car over his head, reenacting Action Comics number one. I think I paid 80 for that. And again, this is way above what you probably would get if you go to San Diego or you register for it. You can buy like one or two and they mail it to you. Obviously, they're mailing it to them now. But that Superman Action 1 is going about 500 bucks right now. Why am I saying this? Well, if you're interested, get yourself one of these first Batmobiles. I do not see them going down, because the only way you could get it is if you bought a ticket for San Diego, if you're lucky enough to go, and if you registered with Mattel. I have not gone on eBay yet to look at all the other goody San Diego exclusives. It's easy. Just go SDCC 2021 and rub that credit card up. Meantime, I'm putting this back in its corrective box, and I will take it out and ooh and ah, and I'll show it to you, Corey, next time we get together. As far as the other geeking thing, which I've been alluding to, my wife and I went and we cleaned out more of our garage. And one of the things I kept running across were oodles of weird stuff. Things, some of it I'll put on the eBays. Some of it are just weird things, like I have the original Doctor Who VHS tapes from BBC Video of Frontier in Space and Doctor Who and the Silurians. I don't know if it's Silurians, whatever. John Peterwee tapes, never opened. And these I bought from Tower, which means I probably bought them. We never had a Tower in town, did we?
No, we did not.
So this must have been when I went down to my wife and I did that trip from Graceland and went north. And I've never opened them. I know I have a functional VCR somewhere, but, you know, I probably got the DVDs now, so I'll put them on. I found all sorts of fun little goofy things like that. And if I find something, you know, that could be fun to share, I'll definitely talk to you about it. The rest is going on eBay. Tons and tons of, I had about 7 to 8 graphic or comic boxes full of diecasts, and I basically transferred them into a box like what we get on Box Day, and I filled like 5 of those, and it was fun just seeing some of them. Where the hell did they go? Whatever. I'll talk about it. I mean, some of it's just. Ask her. Hang on. I'm gonna run over here and find my box. I know it's over here somewhere. Oh, here it is. Oh my God, I can't believe this is that heavy. But one of the things I love buying, and I'm trying to cut back on Matchbox cars, because like I said, these were 7 long boxes full of Hot Wheels, Matchbox, whatever, Corgi Juniors. Oh, here it is. My Wonder Woman Invisible Jet, factory sealed. It's got Wonder Woman holding the magic lasso on top of her jet. So this was like the reissue. Over here, I've got a Scooby-Doo mystery van. Here's my Spider-Man mobile with issue number 130, Hammerhead banging onto the car. But I really love not only like superhero tie-ins, but also like here I've got Hot Wheels did a 50th Hot Wheel where they put Alex Ross's art on it. And so here's Superman in his classic open the chest. Over here's another Batmobile in Scooby-Doo colors. Here's a Van Guardians of the Galaxy Milano. Over here is Deadpool's Chimichanga truck. I love that type of stuff. I got the Peanuts Snoopy. I like to open them. You know, like here I've got the Grummobile from Despicable Me. Down on the bottom, I've got a Corgi Jr. of the truck that Jerry Reed rode in Smokey and the Bandit, complete with the graphic alongside of it. That one I probably won't open because it's very expensive right now. But I'm just loving this. I started doing that because I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And that doesn't count my trays, you know, the little. I got tons more diecasts. Trust me, folks, I've been buying diecasts since the 80s. And I still, I'm a shopaholic. I admit it. I've curbed my habits a lot. Yeah, right. And but what I, you know, if to me, I'll buy a Hot Wheel here and there just to give them, say to my urge. Plus, they're still a buck. They were a buck when I was a kid. And then, you know, I'll pay like $150 for a first Batmobile. But that's a different subject. So, but yeah, it was good. We cleaned out the garage. We got rid of a lot of stuff. We put a lot of stuff into the storage bin. Consequently, my coat and my pants and my shirt were just dirtier than belief. So they went in the wash. I lost my clip-on sunglasses, and then I went to Amazon. See how it all freaking geeking? I just can't do it alone. I have to intersync them. How about you, Corey? How are you doing? How's your geeking?
I hold in my hand.
Whoa.
Vampress Carmilla, issue 6, Richard Corbin's final cover art. Ooh. And it's a T-Rex chasing a woman, while another woman is chained up and a T-Rex has already caught her. This is another from the...
You take a picture of that and send it to me.
It's from Warrant Magazines, which is Rich Sala's tribute to Warren Magazines. He started with the Creeps. Finally, Creepy threatened him enough that he has changed the name of that magazine to Shudder. But this is the Vampress Carmilla, which is basically, you know, more of the same thing. Short horror stories, black and white magazine. The vast majority of these are written by Don Glut, who wrote a lot of stuff for Warren back in the late 60s, early 70s. I love this stuff. I could not read Warren magazines when I was a kid, because when they did have them around, my mother would say, oh, no, you're not reading that. And then by the time I could buy them myself, they were nowhere to be found. And then by the time they went under, it's like, oh, wow, comic shops. I can finally try these Warren magazines. And the shop owner said, yeah, they went out of business. I also got in my box Dan Barrington's Nocturnals Omnibus. Nocturnals is a fully painted comic that he started over at DC, moved over to Dark Horse and self-publishing. It is a mysterious group of where Doc Horror pulls together his gifted daughter, Evening, a la Halloween Girl, who carries a pumpkin full of haunted toys, the Gun Witch, another witch called Polychrome, and a bunch of other characters basically fighting the horrible things that threaten humanity. It's basically Dan Barrington really loved horror movies as a kid, so he decided he was going to make his own. Fully painted, beautiful, beautiful stuff. Last night's All Elite Wrestling may have been one of the most perfect wrestling shows I've ever seen in my life. There were serious matches. There were brawls. There was some classic stuff. And then it ended with a 15-minute goofy match with one group in their Halloween costumes, another group in their Halloween costumes. And it reminded me a lot of the silly, goofy stuff that wrestling can do from time to time. just an absolute fun show. They are really firing on all cylinders on All Elite Wrestling lately. CM Punk is telling a long story with his matches while he's getting back in ring shape. Daniel Bryan is fantastic. He gave an interview recently where he said, if you just look at the amount of wrestling, you would have to watch 10 hours of WWE to get the same amount of wrestling as you get at a two-hour AEW show. Couldn't agree more. And it's Halloween this weekend, which means that when this episode comes out, November 1st, one of my favorite days of the year. You know what day that is, Joe.
I didn't know you celebrated All Saints Day.
No, it's Half Price Candy Day.
Oh, yes.
And comic-wise, those are the two things I'm going to be reading. I'm also, they added a bunch of Ghost Rider from issue 20 to issue 36 that were not up on Marvel Unlimited. So I was able to finally, they've added those and I'm reading them. And that's another one of those series where it's like, okay, Gary Conway starts a story. And then this guy writes the next part. And this guy writes the next part. And then Jim Shooter writes the final part. God, the 70s were a mess. So they introduce this mysterious figure. Gary Conway introduces a mysterious figure. It goes through the hands of two other writers, and Jim Shooter's the one who has to wrap up the story. Ugh, I can't imagine how chaotic it must have been at Marvel in the mid-70s. But boy, it sure gave us some funny books that we loved. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books and almost funny books only for an hour and a half.
Amazing.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Did you hear that the CIA hired Stanley Kubrick to fake the moon landings? He was such a perfectionist, he made them film on location. All right. Corey, play your... Go ahead, Corey. Play your music.
Done, bitches!